the OTB Podcast Network.
CBN live in association with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, giving you the confidence to tackle the day ahead. It is time for the Gillette Performance Rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on the second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's Performance Rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances was just lacked that intensity.
Right, where do we start?
We start with the bad. It's the bad, the good, the grand. Every Monday morning here. So a couple of the bads, the advantage rule and the Lakers, which we'll get to in a moment. We're not going to mention Clare here for the time being, even though they could most definitely be there. We're not going to mention Mike Brown here, even though he stood on somebody's head. We're not going to mention Bryson DeChambeau here, even though he flew home after thinking he missed the cut, but actually made the cut, so had to get his private jet back from Texas again. And and we're not going to mention Big Sam here. Sorry, we're going to get to that a little bit later on in the show. They're probably the honourable mentions when it comes to the bad, but we're going to start here with the advantage rule. Jared, this is something that's annoyed you, that this has really grinded your gears over the course of the weekend, watching Dublin versus Kilkenny and those beautiful cats not being able to play silky hurling without the bloody whistle of the referee going.
So I thought the advantage rule worked relatively well in GAA. You felt sometimes they didn't let it develop enough, then they would be like, oh, you had your chance there. You know, it seemed like it was over in a split second. But now the saying has become, the advantage is the free. And you're like, that kind of misses the point of the advantage rule. So Kilkenny, man comes down with the ball, man gets fouled, lays it off, gets thrown over the bar straight away. Referee calls it back. The free, which is relatively straightforward free, gets missed. Suddenly you're introducing an element of chance to what was already guaranteed, whereas they could have just put the flag up and moved on. We all would have got on with our lives. Instead, it's stop, start, stop. Oh, take that 35 seconds over the free, have the routine, check the grass, lick your, you know, check them. And then all of a sudden it's like, there's a minute of our lives that we really could have been watching them play hurling. So I know this came up in the call that they did last week with the media saying that actually, I know you're all talking about the sin bin and the cynical fouling and all that kind of stuff, but keep an eye on the advantage rule this weekend. That might be something that we all end up talking about. And lo and behold, people are talking about it, because I just think that in big games this year, there's going to be a goal-scoring opportunity denied somebody because the referee blows for a free. The free is not the advantage. I don't know if this is some kind of weird reaction to rugby. It's like, or whatever. I don't know. I don't understand why this particular rule needed to be changed, but maybe somebody out there can enlighten us.
The one thing we didn't need to see more of in hurling was good free taking. The free takers already have enough of the limelight. And yes, if the advantage rule would actually benefit the attacking team more by awarding the free, that's great, but it doesn't. It takes away goal scoring opportunities quite often. But we have enough of seeing TJ Reid scoring 112. We don't need to see him scoring 114 in again.
An actual score got chalked off at the weekend. It was over the bar. The umpire had his flag waved, ready to go, and we were all happy with our lives. But it got chalked off, and then the free got missed. And you're like, what happens if that happened in an All-Ireland final?
Yeah, the other thing about the advantage rule is that what actually constitutes an advantage, it would generally be like scoring positions. So I wonder if actually in modern hurling, if you've got outside your full back line, you're actually in a scoring position, and every advantage from there on out is actually a case of advantage for the scorer. But we're going to have Neil McManus with us a little bit later on once we get into the good of the performance rankings. Like, he scored from 100 yards yesterday, which had also about 20 metres to spare on the other side of the goalpost when it went over. People are scoring from everywhere. We've seen little tactical shifts here and there. Like, the certain trends that have come up in hurling over the past couple of years, they haven't seemed to have slowed down at all over the winter whatsoever. Maybe people have been in the gym quite a bit. Everybody's bulked up a bit. Everybody looked in pretty good shape, to be honest, over the course of the week. There was no sort of early league sluggishness on a physical level. There might have been when it came to actual the sharpness of the skills and all that, but the one trend was certainly those big booming scores that we've got used to over the past couple of years. They've gone nowhere. But then on the other side of the coin, you have a team like Cork who had their eye in when it came to goal, and it looked like Waterford might have actually pulled it back to some sort of epic comeback at the end, and then all of a sudden Cork ended up winning the game by like four goals, which is just this late flurry of ruthlessness in front of goal, where instead of taking their points to kill off the game, they're like, no, we're going for the throat here. So it's interesting. It's like, we're going to see a lot of 100-metre points, I reckon, this year. But then we might also see a little bit of a shift when it comes to the goal-scoring attitudes of a team like Cork.
Yeah, look, it's impossible to know if that makes it easier or harder for teams to close the gap on the teams who are supposed to be superior to them. If you have players who can score from that distance, do we start seeing a lot of Hail Mary shots? I don't know. Look, I think it was a relatively bloodless opening weekend in terms of hurling, with the exception of what happened in Belfast. So more analysis coming on that a little bit later.
Yeah, let's move on to the Grand. So in the Orange this week, we have Manchester United. Obviously, I think it's been a pretty good few weeks for Manchester United. Their title race was never going to go their favour. The one trophy that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was going to focus on was going to be the Europa League. Like, the kind of contradiction is that the Europa League has been a great incentive for teams to win in order to qualify for the Champions League. I would say that that's actually more important for many teams than the trophy itself. It certainly would have been from Arsenal's perspective, for example, and maybe even Tottenham's perspective, had they gone a little bit further into the competition. Whereas Manchester United, they're obviously going to be guaranteed Champions League football next season, regardless of what happens in this final. But yet you feel that Solskjaer really wants a trophy, and it kind of feels, not at the same level of Chelsea versus Manchester City in the preparations for the Champions League final, but it kind of feels like Manchester United players are fighting for their starting spot in that Europa League final. This really feels like the centrepiece of their season.
Do you think so? I think he knows his team. I think he's already got his team in his head. It feels to me that he's got a very close to settled team, and if maybe it's Greenwood or Rashford, and that's it. I would have them in the amber because I don't know what the truth about this team is, and I suspect that none of us do, that there's been this run of form where their defence is prone to lapses against teams where so many of these matches we've seen them be 1-0 down at half time or concede early, and you're like, is it a really good sign of the team that they're capable of coming back and always winning these matches, as they have been against inferior opposition like Aston Villa? And it's definitely inferior opposition when no Jack Grealish is there. Or is it a sign of some weird kink in the system that next season, over the course, when the pressure is on, when it's not guaranteed they're going to be in the top four, and it's also not guaranteed that they're not going to be competing for the title, because they're in this kind of weird no man's land at the moment, are they psychologically missing something? Is there a weakness in this team that sees them go behind against inferior opposition that switches off? What's going on?
Is there something missing for Manchester United? Of course there's something missing. They need to make improvements to win the Premier League next season if they're going to do that. But is there something psychologically missing? I'm not sure. Like, I would definitely lean more towards the fact that they've got a better record coming from behind than any other team in the Premier League by a distance.
But they keep going behind.
I hear your point.
Like, so how do you balance these out? So it's the start of next season, right? Let's say there's been no significant changes in terms of personnel in any of the major contenders. Well, obviously that's not going to happen. There will be some big signings, we know there will. But let's say you've got Chelsea, Manchester City, Liverpool have Van Dijk back, and you've got Manchester United. I don't know if anybody else thinks anybody outside of those four are legitimate title contenders at the start of next season. But how do you assess Manchester United going into the start of next season on the basis of what you've seen this year? Is it the team who rampages in the second half against Roma? Or is it the team who, against Roma, concedes three goals in the second leg?
I think that the team that concedes three goals in the second leg against Roma is not a team we've seen overly often for Manchester United. Like, okay, there have been really bad breakdowns. Like, that situation where Demba Ba scores against them for Istanbul Basaksehir, for example, when all the Manchester United players were in the opposition half. It's like, what happened in that situation? Why was there such a mad meltdown? Like, what happened on the front of Victor Lindelof yesterday, for example, when Traore scores that goal? Like, where are these little faults coming from? And I would definitely put that down to, I don't know, just maybe a lack of quality in that backline. That backline will give opportunities to opponents to take an early lead, to take a lead at some point in the game, and that is why Manchester United are in this position rather than some sort of psychological weakness.
Okay, so then therefore they are not genuine title contenders over the course of the full season.
I think it's very hard to make a case that they're going to finish above Chelsea and Manchester City next season. Liverpool, again, this will come back to the whole idea. Will a full Anfield bring Liverpool back to the top table next season? I don't know. I don't think anybody can tell how real the problems are there. So I think that's your top four for sure. Manchester United are definitely in that, and they should be able to mount some sort of title challenge up until January, February again next season. But that, can they go beyond that is the question. Like, I mean, they've beaten Manchester City. That was during a period of time when Manchester City were playing some awesome football this season. They've got back to that level in recent weeks, but that was pre the Manchester City blip. There have been enough moments in big games this season for Manchester United where you're like, they have the raw elements to launch a sustained title challenge next season. I believe they can, but I just think Manchester City and Chelsea are better teams, and United can have a better season next year than this season and still finish third.
Okay, people have been touched to say that you, Owen, you need to go into the red today because you were like, oh, I'm going to talk about the Lakers in just a minute, and then you just skipped over them because obviously you weren't even paying attention to your own stuff.
I wasn't even paying attention to my own stuff. We went straight on to Amber from the Advantage Rule. You missed the one in the middle there, the Lakers. Despite the fact that they won last night, I just want to give these a quick mention because they lost a vital game on Friday night, early hours of Saturday morning Irish time against the Portland Trail Blazers, which puts the Los Angeles Lakers in jeopardy of not making the playoffs. This is the LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Los Angeles Lakers. Of course, LeBron hasn't been playing for a lot of the last few weeks. Anthony Davis is only after coming back. But the NBA, in order to counteract some early playoffs dullness, to counteract a smaller season, they've come up with this play-in tournament where the minnows of the basketball world, the romantic stories like the New York Knicks, may be able to get an opportunity to maybe get the feeling of some playoff basketball in Madison Square Garden, for example. Give the small guy a break. As it has turned out, the New York Knicks are going straight to the playoffs. They don't need any play-in tournament, but the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James do. The first round of their play-in tournament, which is a one-off game against an opponent on the current seedings, is going to be against Steph Curry's Golden State Warriors. Now, the loser does not go home automatically, but the loser goes home automatically if they lose the game. After the game, they lose here in the first game of the play-in tournament. So we could have Steph versus LeBron next week in a winner goes to the playoffs, loser is one game away from elimination, which is a game of massive consequence. Nobody at the start of the season thought the Lakers would be in this position. They're in a bad way. And sometimes LeBron needs a few games to ease his way into the playoffs, but he's not going to get that on this occasion. They're going to have to win back-to-back games, assuming they do fall into the play-in tournament. Anthony Davis was asked about LeBron last night, and he said, what I saw from LeBron today, he'll be fine. Trust me, he'll be fine.
He hasn't been playing because he's injured, because he wanted a rest. Is that what? We don't know. It has been unspecified.
He got injured, came back, picked up another little ankle niggle when he came back, and right. Now the theory is that they're just wrapping him up in cotton wool because there is no point risking him. They're not going to fall out of the play-in tournament at this stage. We're into the final week of the
play-in tournament that you're just going to explain briefly to anybody who hasn't been paying attention to this.
So this is to give an opportunity for Team 7, 8, 9 and 10 in the East and in the West to qualify for the playoffs. So
who wouldn't normally qualify?
9 and 10. So it's usually just 1 to 8. So they've given 7 to 10 opportunities to qualify and join the top 6. The top 6 are automatically in. So 9 plays 10, 7 plays 8. Whoever loses 9 versus 10, they're out straight away. The winner then goes on to play the loser of 7 versus 8. The winner of 7 versus 8 will already have made the playoffs.
Okay.
And then the remainder.
It's just a way of making the last few weeks of the season even more interesting. And
exactly.
It does mean that like 20 teams essentially qualify for the playoffs because the play-in is actually still the playoffs.
Which is ridiculous. I think one of the reasons why they did it is that you never get an early round shock in the playoffs anymore unless there's a massive injury to the one seed. Nobody expected the Lakers to have to need this. This was not supposed to be a Lakers storyline whatsoever. And that is why they're in the red.
All right. Okay, so that is a crack with the red. We've already done the amber, Manchester United. We'll get to Rory McIlroy in just a minute, but let's start with Antrim Hurling. And I'm delighted to say Neil McManus is with us this morning. Neil, how the hell are you?
Very well this morning. Very well. How are you?
I'd say so. Talk us through your last point there, which is the game is tied and you're deep in your own half, picking a ball up and decide, I'm going to go for it from here. But you're like, I'd say, 600 metres away from goal. What was going through your head?
Get the four iron out. I'd say all through the game we had kind of picked out a nice passage to play, and Clare actually had a good goal opportunity, and Paddy Burke got his body in front of, and Ryan Elliott cleared it out, and we were stringing a couple of passes together, and I ended up with it in kind of a free shot. And some of the Darns often said to us, you know, whatever's instinctive, do it. Luckily, that one went over, so the boys are keeping me going. They say if you shoot enough, some of them are bound to go over.
to take the shot on, you obviously had a bit of confidence, not only that you were going to be able to make it, but that if it missed, there was not going to be any repercussions. That, I guess, comes from that point you're making there, the management structure gives you confidence to do this. But I think as well, the confidence that the team has must be the type of thing that liberates you and your teammates to be trying things in that scenario.
I think so. And really, you know, it's, had I been under huge pressure, maybe I would have passed it off again. But, you know, I had that the second just to line myself up for it. But as well as that, I think, you know, having come up from Division 2 last year and having played Joe McDonagh last year, I don't think there's very much, you know, there are very many people giving Antrim a chance against any of these bigger teams. So there's an element of freedom there within our game. So we intend to enjoy each of these occasions.
Did the Dundalo Cusack comments filter into your camp?
Yeah, well, you know, we heard them obviously that evening. But in fairness to Dundalo Cusack, his analysis of that game was pretty spot on. I thought it was a really nervy encounter from Andrew Mankerry, and neither of us gave a true reflection of the ability of our teams on in the Joe McDonagh final. I suppose there was just so much at stake for both counties, and it was you know, the hurling was not to the level that had been exhibited throughout the Joe McDonagh campaign. The final was, you know, poor enough in truth. But, you know, we knew there was far more in it, and that's, we had commented, you know, in a few days afterwards, and people had asked that the comments were saying, you know, the analysis might not be too far off the mark, but, you know, there'll be better days ahead.
Is that the sort of situation that brings this team on then? As you mentioned, a game that maybe wasn't as high quality as people expected, but I presume that was down to playing on All-Ireland final day and everything being on the line.
Yeah, and, you know, a huge amount of players on both sides had never played in Croke Park before. It was All-Ireland final day, but the big ticket was just in front of you. You know, win this one game and you were back into the Liam McCarthy, and that's massive for all hurlers. You know, I suppose whenever there is so much at stake, you're going to have... you're going to have mistakes. You're going to have people doing things that they wouldn't normally do. And I think they just held it together slightly better than Kerry on the day, and that was all that was between the two teams, actually.
It would have been obviously amazing to have a full Carrigan Park there yesterday. It's hopefully something we'll see over the next little while. Even from what you've heard on social media, texts from your mates, what sort of reaction has this got across the county?
It's been very well received, obviously. But, you know, people within Antrim would know of the kind of team that we have, and, you know, the work that we're putting in. So, you know, I think there was a few people, you know, who had called this one and thought that we were in with a really good shout. And that's all you know, if we set ourselves up properly and prepare really, really well and perform to the highest level, it gives us a chance. That's all it gives us. So it wasn't maybe just as big a shock in certain areas of the country as it was in Antrim. But still, you know, it's our first time beating one of the Munster Championship teams in a long, long time anyway. So, you know, again, the bookmakers don't get it wrong too often, but thankfully they did yesterday.
Neil, I've recollections of Kilkenny being beaten in a league game, but I'm fairly sure it was up in Ballycastle. I don't really remember there being a big win like this in the city as well. And you know, there's obviously huge geographical issues with the pockets of hurling that there are in the county, but, like, outbreaks of victories like this, there will be more kids at training this week and next week and the week after as a result of a win like this. Like, this is it's a long, hard struggle to make hurling as good as it could be in Antrim.
Really, the city is the key to it, in my opinion. Because the Glens is always very strong. North Antrim as a whole is very, very strong, vibrant. Hurling scene at the minute, but the city, you know, you've got 300,000 people, you know, in the city or thereabouts, and you have, unfortunately, only half of those people are interested in Gaelic games, but, you know, it's still a huge untapped resource for the level of participation we have, and there is a Gaelfast project which is in operation to try and resolve that and make some headway there, so hopefully, you know, we'll see further funding from the GA put into that programme, and then we can capitalise on what could be, because, you know, it's the second city of Ireland, and the GA scene here in it at the minute just isn't strong enough.
And I, you know, again, like, it's one small staging post along the way, but victories like that really help.
They do. And at the end of the day, it's still just 2 points in a league campaign. There's 4 more games to play. But you know, those things are a shot in the arm, definitely for Hurling as a whole. But that doesn't solve the deeper rooted issues that are there, still to be untangled and worked out.
Your decision to keep going, it's 14 seasons, I think, since you made your senior inter-county debut. Was there ever any doubt after you won last year that you were going to come back this year? And was it a difficult decision, or was it fairly straightforward?
It was straightforward in my mind. I think a couple of years ago, the decision was kind of harder because it didn't seem like we were really going anywhere. But, you know, the progress was clear to be seen for probably most people inside the panel, more so than outside the panel, because it wasn't be a big shock and winning a Joe McDonough or getting promotion to the A's. That's happened in the more recent future, but I think people inside the panel knew that we were progressing. So no, it definitely wasn't a hard decision to go back this year.
Talk to us a little bit about the influence of Darren Gleeson, will you, and just the impact that he's having.
Yeah, well, the thing that Darren has that is probably unavailable almost in the county is the experience of being an All-Ireland winner. You know, he's been in those high-pressure situations, All-Ireland final day, and he brings that experience, and we get great confidence from that, I must admit, because he's, you know, telling us, you know, that Tipperary and Clare and Kilkenny are doing these things that we're now doing, so that gives you confidence, and that's probably something that that outside influence has been missing for a few years.
Yeah, and you can see the impact of it really quickly. It's funny how sometimes that extra voice from outside is the spark to bring people together.
Yeah, it's just, I think he obviously understands the game very well, but he's just telling us, you know, what you're doing is right. You're following my process. This is what's been done in all the top hurling counties. Keep following it. Keep doing what you're doing, and you know, good things will happen.
Yeah. Well, listen, Neil, a sensational win, a sensational winning score as well. And thanks a million for joining us this morning. Keep it up.
Thank you very much.
Neil McManus there giving us some thoughts on the big story of the hurling weekend, and they're absolutely in the green this week.
Absolutely in the green, and then it's off to Nolan Park for Antrim next Sunday, where Brian Cody will have the honour of going up against Darren Gleeson as manager. This is going to be an exciting few weeks for them, because they're obviously there, and these league games are massive moments for them, whereas they might come up against opponents who are trying things out, where they kind of view their provincial championships as bigger. But like, the one thing that's kind of come out as a theme from yesterday is that this wasn't really a shock. You can kind of get the sense there from Neil that they expected that they'd be able to do something like this in this league campaign. And Gerlach Nan in the Irish Daily Star this morning saying that Clare losing to Antrim yesterday was no big surprise. So that seems to be one of the themes that we're getting over the course of the last 24 hours.
It was a bit of a surprise. You've got to say it was a bit of a surprise.
I didn't see it coming personally, but like, maybe it's the manner of the victory for them, where like there was this kind of a little bit of a comeback early on, and then just these incredible moments, like the score obviously that you spoke to Neil about there a moment ago, that pop up at the end of the game. It's like this team kind of knows how to win a game like this. It didn't feel like they were shy about it, or that they kind of were reluctant to take the opportunities that presented themselves on the day. But that was certainly a no-brainer when it came to the green this week.
Clare should have been in the red, obviously, right? We to spare their blushes this week, and because it's the first round of the league, we're going to take it easy on them. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, there's a lot of contenders in the red. I did give them a passing mention there. We'll get into a bit of Clare with Paddy Stapleton later, but once something like this happens to the banner, you go to Gerlach Nan to see what he is saying about them. And he uses phrases like massive crisis in Clare. We haven't won an under-21 game in 5 years, are being beaten by an average of 12 points. The players coming through are genuine, but the quality is very, very low in the eyes of Gerlach Nan. He said you would struggle to find five banner players of top class inter-county quality. So it's pretty tough stuff. He says people have been warning, I'm not sure who these people are, people have been warning that Clare could be a Joe McDonagh Cup team when the day comes that Tony Kelly is not there. So I hadn't heard that particular phrase before, but if you take Tony Kelly out of Clare, Gerlach Nan is putting forward the argument that they're a Joe McDonagh Cup team. The biggest problem is that there are so few people in the county able to judge the standard and realise that that is the situation, and none of them are in the county board. So I think you can probably guess where he is pointing the finger at one of the main problems in Clare at the moment. And it is impossible to separate yesterday's defeat from what's been going on in the county over the last
couple of months. It's literally the only topic of conversation that comes up. Were the players distracted by everything that was going off the field? It's kind of like one of the first questions that gets asked of Brian Lowe, and he's like, I mean, you know, I don't think so. Like, but were they? I don't know. It's how do you separate this massive, the house is on fire and you're asked to go out and hurl on the pitch while you're watching the house on fire going, is that something that we need to be concerned about? Mm. Who else is in the red? Or in the green? Sorry, last one for green for now.
The green, Rory McIlroy, is who we've already touched on this morning here at the top of the show, but he is in the green. He is back to winning ways. Hasn't won since China at the end of 2019. All of our lives have been screwed up since the end of 2019. Rory McIlroy is no different. And I don't know, maybe he's right. Maybe this is just a comeback. Maybe he is the USPGA favourite.
Grey in that beard as well. Is that since the birth?
First win as a father on American Mother's Day, no less. Not quite Irish Mother's Day, but like these are all the different factors that he was asked about afterwards. But the big thing is the energy of that Quail Hollow crowd that really spurred him on to victory in the end.
Is there anything more worrying than waking up on American Mothering Sunday and seeing your Twitter feed, everybody wishing everybody Mother's Day, and going, oh no, did I forget? And then you realise every year it's like, Those crazy Americans and their different dates from us. I don't know why we haven't synchronized this or why they haven't just copied us, because obviously we were first, but
It's a scandal, really. That needs to be sorted out.
Every Monday morning on OTBAM, we give you the chance to win a Gillette starter pack. All you got to do is send us in your suggestions. Who should have made the cut after the weekend that was? You can get in touch throughout the show. We'll pick a winner out before 9:30. We want to know the good, the bad, and the grand. So the grand is obviously in amber. Some suggestions. Lewis Hamilton needs to make the cut, and Chelsea says Claff 88. Ronan says Antrim for beating Clare. They did make it. Mo Yassin says stick Sam Allardyce in the red for his first relegation. Poor big Sam. That record gone. Does that mean he's off the managerial gravy train? Does it? Does that mean no one's going to... Or does that mean that whoever's first in... is it Norwich next season? He'll be reaching for the big Sam. Missed performance rankings, but Milan beat Juve in Turin for the first time in 10 years. The race for fourth, an important game. Milan won 3-0. And then surely Man City, and in particular Sergio Aguero, needed to be in the red in the pressure rankings. They didn't win the title and gave the advantage to Chelsea, with the Champions League final coming in a few weeks. Certainly Aguero is getting it in the neck from a lot of people for his performance at the weekend. But we might talk about that with Mark Lawrence in a little bit later on. So our performance rankings: the number 5, the GA advantage rule. Number 4, LeBron James and the Lakers. Number 3, Man United next season. Number 2, Rory McIlroy, Quail Hollow. And number 1 were the Antrim Hurlers, who beat Clare. We'll announce the competition winner a little later this morning.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.